Hey, Joan?
Yes?
I don't know what the other code is. Was I supposed to do something else? I just got a prompt for another code.
Did you press 1?
Uh-huh. Just star 1, correct?
Yeah, maybe, you know what, I think it was just 1. I think I screwed up.
Okay, I'll try it again. Just 1. Okay, hang on.
Kendra?
I think... Uh-oh.
I know. We might have to start this over. Okay. Who all did I lose? I've lost... Karen and Kendra.
Kendra's here. Kendra was on mute. Kendra's
okay.
There.
All right. All right. Well, Karen will be back in a minute. Okay. So we'll give Karen a minute, but this is Joan Ranquet, and we are here with the Animal Education Teleseminars with Communication with All Life University, and we have our guest this evening is Sarah, who is a hypnotist that works primarily with horse and rider, and this is going to be very exciting because God knows what happens in our minds that make us do the things that we do, but we're going to find out. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you very much, Joan. And hello, everybody.
I would love to start out with, because everybody comes to animal communication, well, we've had a few people that start out at a young age, but most people come as a second, third career. So how did you get started with hypnotherapy?
I actually was kind of an accident because I was actually looking for a job. And I came across a gentleman at one of the job fairs who was doing advertising for the Hypnosis Motivation Institute. And a lot of the program was basically psychotherapy with the addition of hypnosis. It had never occurred to me to be a hypnotherapist. But once I started to do it, plus all the other psychology background that I had, it just made sense. And it's a natural state that people go into, the hypnosis, the trance state. And it kind of followed. It was a great accident for me.
What is, and then before I want to ask about the trance state, but...
Okay.
But before I ask about that, you have a master's in psychology?
Yes, I do. I did my master's thesis actually at that partnership bereavement, widowhood, loss of a spouse or a long-term partner, and I did that actually overseas, so I couldn't transfer without a lot of extra schooling, the credits, whatever, to be a therapist. But with the hypnotherapy program I did, it was an intensive year course with certification at the end to be a hypnotherapist. And a lot of the things that I do, it's fine to do, but for example, if I work to help manage pain or if somebody has post-traumatic stress disorder or something like that, I do have to be working with either a physician or a licensed psychotherapist. But most of the other things I do when I work with equestrians, preparing for shows or dealing with anxieties or fears if there's been an accident with the horse, that's something I can generally do just on my own. Did that answer your question, kind of?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I'm wondering if with this trance state, and I want to get into some specifics here in a minute, with this trance state, tell us about the trance state.
Okay. The trance state, actually everybody experiences twice a day. When you first wake up in the morning and about half an hour before you fall asleep, it's a state of extreme relaxation and comfort, kind of drowsy sensation. When I start bringing somebody into trance for hypnotherapy, actually the perception and the senses become heightened. And it's like if you were ever drifting off to sleep and you heard a loud noise, you'd immediately startle back into alertness. When you're in hypnosis, when you're in a trance state, even though you're relaxed, you are very aware of of your surroundings. And I always remind people when I'm working with them about the control that they have when they're in the state of relaxation, that if they need to at any time, they can bring themselves back into the complete alert-aware state. But in general, the trance state, the state of hypnosis, is very relaxing. People get kind of addicted, I think, to enjoying this relaxation, because when you're in it, it's like the world stops. You can compare it maybe to the runner's high, or when people really get in the zone participating in a sport or some activity, when everything focuses just on this one area that you're working on. When you're in trance. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, just even in meditation, if you can get there, it's the same.
Yeah, the difference with the meditation, I believe, if you want to generally empty your mind, you don't want to be thinking about things. When the hypnotic trance that I help people to achieve, I am giving them suggestions based on things that they want to change, behaviors they want to change, goals that they have that they want to achieve, and giving positive feedback, motivation, those kinds of thoughts. The term for this, but if you're giving yourself affirmations, it would be like giving yourself an affirmation. So I'm actually giving somebody, while they're in the relaxation state, I'm giving back the motivations, the affirmations, the beliefs that they have back to them to boost them up so they can go and work on the goals that they want to achieve. So that's the difference between the meditation where you want to empty your mind and just be, I guess, in a very neutral, that how you would describe it, kind of neutral state. Hypnosis is a little bit different because I do help people to be focusing on one area that they want to work on.
And with this state, this trance state, what does it? I mean, it's sort of like, oh, that's when you imagine that you're at a party and somebody comes through and hypnotizes everybody, and everybody's dancing on the table in no time. What's the difference between that sort of like crazy idea that people could be able to like dance naked versus win a horse show?
Oh, the big difference with that is the hypnotist at a party and the hypnotism I do, the techniques probably are very similar. There are many different ways to get somebody into a trance. It's what you do with it after that at a party. The point would be to probably try to embarrass the person, laugh, have a good time, whatever. With hypnotherapy, my goal, my responsibility is to help that my client to feel as comfortable and safe and relaxed as possible. And I follow the guidelines with the American Psychological Association in terms of confidentiality and respect and of boundaries and areas like that. Also, one of the things that I do when I'm working with somebody, helping the person get into the trance state, into the hypnosis state, I focus on what we call the suggestibility of the person. And suggestibility is referring to how a person learns and understands. There are two kinds of general terms for suggestibility. One we would call the physical suggestible, which is somebody who interprets very directly and literally. And animals, by the way, horses, dogs, cats, dolphins, etc., they all will tend to be more direct and literal. You give a cue, they interpret it. The other kind of suggestibility that I work with is what we call emotional suggestibility, and that deals with inference and metaphor. If somebody were to ask you, would you tell me your name? If you were to say, yes, it's Joan, you were inferring that that's what the person wanted to know, when the direct question only was, would you tell me? And you would have read into it, yes, this is my name, and tell the name. So when I'm working with somebody to get the person into hypnosis, I word how I am talking and the different kinds of suggestions I give to how my client's subconscious is going to best understand. And there are different ways that I learn suggestibility. One of them is handwriting analysis. Another is just general conversation, listening to the cue words, as I would call them, what the person's telling me. And they're just different physical manifestations, different things that you can pick up, and that's just from observation. There is no... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
There is no black or white. You're either this or that. There's a spectrum of different suggestibility types. So you keep in mind all of that. You could apply that also with the animals. While they tend to be physical, some can be very perceptive, almost intuitive, and you think they're reading your mind because they watch so well what you're doing. It's a similar thing when I start working with horses and with the people who are working with the horse, to remind the client that you're working with another sentient individual. It's got emotions, it's got thoughts, and when you're communicating what you think is a direct request or a direct command, this other being is going to be interpreting based on its experience. So that's where I would come in and have to help the person to fine-tune, I guess, what he or she is saying to the horse, to the dog, to the cat, whatever, and try to get the communication more clear.
With somebody who's had some sort of an accident and they're afraid to get back on their horse, how would you work with that person?
That's a great question. The first thing I would do is help the person to relax with breathing exercises. I do a lot of visual imagery, and one of the exercises that I do with virtually every client, we do what we call this, go to the special place, some place that this person feels very safe, secure, and comfortable. And when we found the special place, then I would start doing some desensitization exercises, gradually introduce some of the memories or the stimuli. For example, if the person has got to the point that he or she doesn't even want to get near a horse, I might bring in or have the person think about the horse's halter, or to think about the soft nose, the one part of the horse they really like, and just gradually get the person comfortable and relaxed and no longer feeling anxiety, thinking about that area, and gradually introducing more and more stimuli until it gets to the point that, yes, this person can think about the horse, can think about what happened. Now, one thing, if there has been a traumatic accident, to consider that maybe this person does have some kind of post-traumatic stress from what had happened. And if I were to suspect that, I would actually refer my client to have a further psychological evaluation with another therapist, because if there is any kind of extreme trauma going on, I know that I would need to have somebody else who is, well, if more familiar with that area and also is licensed in the state to deal with that kind of severe trauma, so I could work with the psychologist or the physician, whoever it happened to be, to use my techniques and also to keep the client safe and physically and emotionally secure in the re-exposure. The one thing that I do tell people that I encourage them and hope that they keep with them is when they're dealing with these animals, that it's okay to be afraid, and that actually is the safety that we all have. These are big animals, no matter how big we are as the human. You can have 800, 1,200 pounds of horse to be working with. my goal as the hypnotherapist is to help my client to feel as comfortable and confident to work with this horse, to be the leader that the horse would be looking for and needing as it goes about its work with the humans. Because one of the first things that horses do, they know when their human is afraid or is not feeling confident, and that's one of the worst situations to be in, because then the horse starts thinking, I've got to be the boss, and it doesn't work. So I remind my clients that it's okay to have the fear, to acknowledge it, but when you are working with these animals, if you want to be working with them, you need to be confident and enjoying what you're doing. And if you want to do that, I can help to build the confidence, to help to reintroduce you to the enjoyment that you had. But my first priority is to make sure everybody is feeling safe and secure and building up for that. And I also always encourage people to, if they don't have their own trainer at that time, to find somebody who's empathetic, who can take you back to scratch if you need to, do lunge line lessons, just do groundwork, working, grooming, whatever you need to do so you can start to feel more comfortable, and then work up that way.
What are some of the steps? What happens in the mind that hypnotism would change?
Well, one of the things that we do is to reintroduce what we call the knowns. What your subconscious is familiar with, what it is comfortable with. Somebody who has been with horses, who rides horses, and I'd liken that to coming to hypnotherapy. That's one of the things that you do because you want to. You have an interest in it. You like it, whatever it happens to be. And people who come to horses, they love the animal. They think they're beautiful. They want to ride, whatever it is. I reinforce that, what we will call the known, this interest in the animal. Now, when there's been some kind of trauma, somebody's had a bad fall or something has happened, and the person doesn't feel comfortable, confident to get back on, I would be working with the person in the cognitive, the kind of state we're in right now, talking about what are your motivations, why are you wanting to be working with horses, riding, whatever it happens to be. And then in hypnosis, I would be giving back that information in the language that the subconscious understands, to reinforce, yes, this is what I want to do. I want to work with my horse. I want to ride my horse, hang out with my horse, because ABC, whatever the reasons that person had given.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that when, at birth, the only thing that people are born with is a reaction to fear of falling and a reaction to the fear of loud noise. So as we grow up, from whatever young or older age the person would have been introduced to horses, decide this is what they want to do, that's something that they learn. In the interim, when this incident happened that they don't want to be near horses, they're afraid of horses, that was a learned behavior too. So the motivation this person has to get back to riding, get back to being with horses, that's something that can be reintroduced, it can be strengthened, because the known of interest in the horse from way back is already there. So this is just a case of reinforcement in that point.
And if they've had a bad fall, do you take them back to before that? Do you help them, you know, create a different ending? What are some of the things that you do in the session that you know, of course, somebody is going to want to come back to horses. I mean, especially if they have a horse. And so they had a bad fall. They're terrified. They're afraid it's going to happen again. They're mad because they're terrified. All those things.
Right. That's a great question, too. One of the things, for example, if the person is having recurring nightmares about the situation, creating a new ending, having the person make up a new ending for the situation where everything worked out, where you hung on, where you were able to keep the horse from doing whatever it had done. That's one thing. There are some neurolinguistic programming techniques that I have used, which I've had used on me as well, where you can actually do a rewind of the incident. So it doesn't erase the memory, but it erases the trauma that was associated with the memory. So you can, if you do think about when it happened, the emotion isn't there. It's like, oh, well, okay, I saw that happen. It's like a commercial, but it didn't, it no longer has the impact. Again, I would do the systematic desensitization as well, so that as the person is thinking about the incident, just doing incremental little pieces of it, get the person relaxed and feeling comfortable. The repetition of this exercise, the mind finds so boring that eventually the person just wants to, okay, go on, let's go to the next part of it. And then when the person is feeling more comfortable and confident to do it, and I'm happy if it's in the neighborhood to come along, I would go with the person to reinforce the relaxation and the comfortable state that they would have had in hypnosis, so that when they do approach the horse again, they can feel relaxed, feel comfortable and confident. But again, everything is a step-by-step process, and particularly when there's been a trauma, I'm very careful not to rush anything, because while I've seen what works and it can be done, every person has his or her own timetable and the recovery, and it never works to make them go faster than they're ready to go. And everybody, the person will let you know when he or she is ready. Okay, I'm ready to go meet my horse again, to actually touch the halter again, whatever it happens to be.
Let's say that they don't even know what their fear is, but they suddenly stop riding. Where would you go with that?
Well, the first thing, another great question, the first thing I would do, which I always do with clients in the first session, is to ask about their nutrition and their sleep. Because there is a very high correlation between the anxiety that comes up from elevated blood sugar and the diet. So if, for example, the person has this vague fear, anxiety around horses, which one day just appeared, my first suspicion would be that this is more of a phobic response. There was no incident that set it off. There wasn't a kick. There wasn't a fall. But one day, this person wasn't feeling well. Something happened in the environment, and the mind will associate, they were going to see the horse, oh, I must be afraid of horses. But what might have actually been the culprit was the fact that this person hadn't eaten breakfast or lunch, and it was late afternoon and had a lot of coffee or something, so the adrenaline's going very strong, but there isn't any fuel, as it were, in the body. So the first thing I always talk to all my clients about the importance of nutrition, making sure that he or she is eating some kind of protein. If you're vegan or vegetarian, I know there are different proteins that you can get. They don't have to be meat or anything like that. But just to make sure that you have the protein, because that actually balances the mood and it balances the adrenaline, the spikes that you get. And I also recommend people cut down on caffeinated beverages before they go to work with their horses as well. Because if you're sensitive in any way to caffeine, that can also boost up the adrenaline system. And you want to be as calm and relaxed as possible and alert. And if you're already being distracted by your own metabolism, by things going on in your body that you're not even aware of, possibly, is going to have some problems for the ride. So that would be one of the first things I would ask about the sleep and about the eating, how the person is managing the day. At that point, if the person's eating the 3 square meals a day and is getting enough sleep, I might still at that point recommend that he or she have a visit their doctor and see if there's anything else going on, just because for the safety of the person and for me, I want to make sure that when the client goes to do the work with the horse, is doing the work with me, that there is nothing going on physiologically that should have been addressed. So that's the first place that we always start. If something's going on with the horse, if it's bucking, is the tack not fitting? The same thing with people. If something isn't working, if you're afraid, if you're fearful, if we can work it out with nutrition and sleep, that's great. If there's something else going on, I want to make sure before I start introducing different kinds of techniques and reintroducing any stimuli, whether it's the memory or whatever, before, that the person is going to be able to deal with it.
And if, okay, so you wouldn't investigate with the person? What possibly triggered? You wouldn't ask them a bunch of questions?
Well, I would. The first thing I would do, though, as well, just to make sure that the diet and the sleep were okay. Now, if there was an actual trauma, then it happened. At that point, I would start doing an interview similar to what we're doing now when asking about the event and listening for what we call the trigger word. The person is blanking out or just not remembering a particular detail about what had happened. Paying attention during later parts of the conversation if other things are being omitted or if things are coming back. I do use dream analysis, so I would ask for the next session if the client would write down any dreams that he or she had, and I would also give a suggestion to release in an early morning waking dream that will be called a venting dream any negative emotion or association that you have with that event. Let it go. And again, I would do some visualization. There are a lot of great imagery exercises, depending on what the person's other interests are, whether they like mountain scenes, beach scenes, whatever their area is. You can use bonfires to destroy any lingering negativity. You can remove the weight of a backpack that you've been carrying the trauma or the negative association around with you. You can leave that someplace. And always giving the person the confidence and the knowledge that you can go back. If you ever feel you need it, you can go back to retrieve it, but you're going to find that you don't want it anymore, that you're able to go on. Sorry, go ahead.
Do you find that if it's something that is like maybe a childhood trauma happened at a barn and years later they don't want to get on their horse and so they... they don't know what it is, but it's in this backpack. Would you want to know what's in the backpack, or would you just say, okay, we're going to leave the backpack?
We would discuss the items in the backpack, something that this person didn't know what had happened way back. Then that would be an option. You can just leave it by the side. You can put it in the tack trunk, whatever you want to do. If the person does know specifically what had happened, again, we can do the desensitization and get the person to a point where whatever trauma had happened, it doesn't affect them anymore. And again, with the repetition of going back step by step to whatever event had happened. But if the person didn't know what that event was, that's when I get to be a little bit more creative and allow the person, give the person permission to give him or herself permission to let it go, to just say, I don't need it. And one thing about traumas as well, I consider them like a scab if you had some kind of cut. If there's a scab there, you don't pick at it. You just let the body heal, let the mind and emotion heal, because when the cause is ready to come out, it will. But by forcing any memory, any association that does do more harm than ever has a benefit. So I wanted to just work around what the incident was.
With let's say, okay, so I'm going to jump to dogs now and people with dogs. And let's say, you know, because with animal communication, we know that animals pick up on our pictures, words, and feelings.
Right.
And so let's say, you know, you went to the dog park one day with your darling, beloved little puppy, and the next thing you know, your puppy gets attacked by a dog.
Okay.
And so then 8 months later, your dog's a little bit bigger, and you're walking your dog on some city street or your suburban neighborhood, and a dog passes by, and your dog becomes the attacker.
Okay.
What would you do with that human?
That human, first thing I would strongly recommend, because I'm not a dog trainer, is for the person to work with a dog trainer.
Okay, let's assume that they're working with a dog.
At that point, I would have the client start to practice the relaxation and the confidence issues, relaxation and confidence exercises that I do with all of my clients. First thing would be to get the person relaxed and calm and able to focus on the energy, the leadership energy that he or she needs to get the dog to heal, do whatever needs to be done to keep the dog from attacking. Now, if the person is afraid of the dog being aggressive toward him or her, or just other dogs, what's the...
I mean, let's just pretend it's other dogs.
Okay.
Like, this is like, on a weekly basis, this is probably 3 times a week I get this call.
Oh, okay.
I mean, this is like, you know, between someone falling off their horse and being really injured and not wanting to get back on their horse and blaming the horse, or now having an aggressive dog as a result of an incident.
Right.
This is like, you know, I mean, whenever I get on talk shows, they always say, what do you get the most? I'm like, peeing cats, horses that won't jump, and dogs that are biting. But there's always a reason for the dog to suddenly start biting. But let's say we actually know, the person remembers what happened. I mean, I try to get them to go back to the idea that, well, your dog lived through it. And you know, but anyway, I want to hear what you would do.
Well, if I had the client whose dog is aggressive, I would first help to re-educate the person with dog pack behavior. And I would probably have to do a little bit of more research from my own as well. But to understand, and also the kind of work that you've been doing with communicating with the animals, to understand that when the dog was attacked, the aggression that has been coming out now, is it defensive, or has this dog always had it in him or her to be an aggressive dog? Now, I have done animal communication myself as well, so the ideal situation would be to talk to somebody like you as well about what this has been going on with the dog, and then to help the human to get into the mindset of, I've got to be alpha now and to make my dog do what it needs to do. It needs to heal. It needs to stand quietly. We need to be able to walk by. Now, with that, I would be doing a lot of self-confidence work with the person so that he or she is able to not only give the commands but also adopt the posture, the look, whatever would be the dog is associating as its pack leader, to help the person to manifest that.
Okay,
so,
and let's take this a step further. Let's assume that there's really no aggression. Nobody just wakes up and is aggressive. I mean, there's maybe 1 in 10 billion. So there's always a reason behind why, whether it's a fear of aggression, which somebody who's going to attack another dog is probably feeling out of fear aggression. So let's say we've got fear aggression. The dog is automatically just being defensive. And you've got a human that doesn't believe that they have anything to do with it. They think their dog has just gone crazy.
Right.
How do you get them to, what sort of steps would you take to get them to understand that the mind is going to first inform then the body, and the body's informing the dog?
Okay, the first thing I would do then, I would emphasize the education, get the books out, to talk to the trainers, to find...
Well, let's say they're going to the dog trainer. They're going to the dog trainer. I'm just talking about specifically hypnosis. What are your steps?
My steps at this point would, again, get the person to be relaxed and to be open-minded in the relaxation state, to be the sponge around the dog, that you are your dog's alpha, you are their protector, that you are the person the dog is going to go to. If you are not believing, you generally are not believing that the dog has a problem, you think it's just lunatic, whatever, or that you know that there's a problem, but you're actually becoming afraid because you don't know how to help, how to intervene, what you should even do. I would be introducing the relaxation and introducing the confidence building work. I would be teaching the person how to clear, I guess you could say, clear his or her mind of the presumptions, any thoughts, positive or negative, about what the situation is. But when they're on the walk, wherever these situations happen to be, we would do this actually as visualization exercises. Pretend you are on the walk with your dog. You are going past that spot where the neighbor's dog likes to jump at the fence and set your dog off. To practice in visualization the scenario and your response of remaining calm, remaining firm in your voice, knowing how to call your dog back, practicing, and I'd give homework as well, practicing the steps of the obedience steps that you've been learning with the dog trainer, so you can continue to reinforce the good behaviors of your dog. So then when you go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
As you practice this in hypnosis as well, the mind doesn't know the difference between reality and fantasy. So if you're practicing doing the homework with your dog, practicing the walk that you do past the neighbor's house with this other dog sets your dog off, and how you respond in a positive, constructive way, able to get your dog to heal, able to walk by, and accepting the positive steps as well, that every time the dog goes by, it might pull on the leash, but it doesn't go bounding toward this other dog. You're able to hold the dog back. So practice the reinforcements that way. That makes sense to you?
Great. And I would love, I'm going to open up the floor here in a second for people to ask questions in our little virtual room here. But before I do, will you please explain a little bit about my favorite line about the, the mind doesn't know the difference between a fantasy and the reality?
Okay. That actually was kind of a surprise to me when I first heard it, that everything that you hear, see, think about, dream about, in the mind, all of that is the same. Everything is equal. It's something you've perceived, something you thought of, you believe it. If you've ever been to a movie and left the theater thinking that, like, you're still in the story, or you've been told something that sounds just believable enough to be believable, but then you find out somebody had just been telling you a white lie or some kind of joke. The mind doesn't know what the conscious mind does. It becomes the filter. It's what says, well, actually, this is right, this is wrong, based on your experience in life. So in hypnosis, the reason why hypnosis works so well is when we get into that relaxed state of complete comfort and calm, the part of the part of the mind we call the critical mind, which is like a secretary at work, somebody who is at the door who decides who gets to go into the building or not. When you're in hypnosis, the critical mind switches off. So the things that your conscious mind would be saying, well, I don't believe that, I don't think that this is right, wrong, whatever, the subconscious, everything is equal down there. Everything is learned. So when you're in hypnosis, everything that would be told in the suggestions, your subconscious just absorbs. So the expression that everything is interpreted equally in the mind, it's a great way, I guess, to reassure somebody that no matter what you believe, you're able to change your behaviors. If there's something you want to change, you can do it, and you're still always in control of what you want to do. Kind of rambling there, sorry.
No,
all that answered your question at all.
Yeah, no, it did. I mean, but it brings me to another question then before I sign off and let everybody ask questions is, you know, I think that particularly when people are working on their own animals, let's say that they do energy work and
okay,
one of their animals has a debilitating disease or, and they haven't, you know, maybe they aren't going to do surgery or surgery isn't an option or whatever it is. So it's sort of like the person, you know, the person that has, so it's not too unlike the person that is dealing with the behavioral thing, even though the bucking horse and the person not getting back on, that's actually the human's behavior. But in the dog situation, it's mutually the dog and the human's behavior that is preventing that from moving forward. But let's say in this situation, you have got the person unaware, and I like to call it the Santa Claus syndrome, of,
okay,
you know, we've heard about Santa Claus, and it turns out it was this big lie. Sometimes people have a real limiting belief about their ability to be a healer with their own animal. And
okay,
so you've got somebody who's got an animal with a debilitating disease. They don't know that they're really going to make a difference in the healing process. They know they can at least keep their animal comfortable. What
right,
would take, what are some things people could do at home that would take them out of critical mind at any given moment?
Well, I would recommend the breathing and relaxation exercises. One of the things that I do, which I teach people to do, is what we call a progressive relaxation. And that starts from the top of the head all the way down to the toes or vice versa, depending how you want to do it, to get the relaxation in there. One thing that I would tell these people as well, that if you've got animals that you look after, if you're a caretaker, there's a part of you that's already listening to them, that's already feeling the energy with them. And while the person might be saying, well, you know, I can't do it, I would counter that with, but I think you already are, and I think you know that you already are as well, because people who bring animals into their home, who take care of them, who nurture them, you've already got that in you to offer the energy healing as well. And when I was doing Reiki training, the woman who was doing initiations for us, she did the example of if you were to bang your knee against a table or something, the first instinct is usually to put the hand over the injured knee. The same thing people, moms do with babies. Child gets a scratch, mom comes, puts the hand on, rinses off, whatever it is. I would encourage the human to consider the animal, as they probably already do, as their non-human baby, whatever the area is that is painful, if the animal allows it, to put your hand on it, to just imagine, visualize, picture, pretend, the healing light, whatever that energy happens to be to you, that you're communicating, that you're sending a universal healing something to your animal. And most animals, pets, enjoy the touch of their human. And just while you're in the relaxed state from the breathing and just focusing on this light, just allow that energy to go through you. And then notice how the animal responds. And usually you get the lick on the hand, or they lift the head up to look at you, whatever it is, but they allow the love to be expressed. I guess that's the point. And that can come through many different ways, but the person has to be allowing him or herself to be open to it and just say, you know what, I'm going to do what I can do. I'm going to take a few deep breaths. I'm just going to put my hand on and see. And I would encourage that. That's something you can do not in hypnosis at all. You can just be sitting there watching TV or just sitting quietly with your dog, cat, whatever it is.
Well, I guess what I'm asking really is there a way that people through relaxation could move out of their critical mind, whether it is to better themselves as an equestrian or to better themselves as a healer? Do you have techniques for that?
Well, that's a different question, sorry. That would really be a case of somebody who wants to do that. And I tell people when they come to me for hypnotherapy that hypnosis is usually one of the last stops people make. The person who comes in for hypnosis, somebody who wants to bypass the critical mind and learn to be a healer, learn to do whatever it is they want to do, this is something they're already interested in doing. So in that sense, the critical mind has already basically been breached a little bit. The other steps after that would just be furthering the education. That would be to learn the different relaxation techniques. It would learn how to channel the energy, the different techniques through energy healing, whatever it happens to be. But usually people who want to learn how to do the hypnosis, who want to learn how to do energy healing, they know they have it in them, and they want to pursue it that way. I find it's more of a, not so much a calling, but people who have the ability to do it, they already know, and they're already taking the step forward to pursue whatever it is.
Absolutely. But what I'm asking is...
I'm sorry.
Is, let's say they already do this, right? Like all the people on the call or all the people that are going to be on the call when they listen to it later. So I'm asking, you know, then it comes to your own animal and you have more doubts. So how does one turn off the critical mind?
Okay. In that case, that would be a conversation like this, where I would ask, what are your doubts? Why do you have them? And then I would pose a question. So if you didn't have any doubts, if you were absolutely sure, what would that be like? How would that feel to you? Would it have a touch? Would it have a color? Would it have a smell, taste, whatever it is? And get the person to describe what that would be like. They're absolutely sure they've got this ability. They want to do it, but they don't have the confidence to actually. I would get them to pretend, because the mind doesn't know the difference between pretend and reality. Pretend you have this ability. What would it be like for you? And after we had discussed that and I got many details, I would then help the person go into the hypnotic state and then give these suggestions back to the person that I am a healer. I am able to give energy, love, whatever, to animals because, and then I would give back the information because I am strong, because I love animals, whatever the person happens to feel. Because I have this ability, I know that I can help. Because I want to help, I know that I can soothe. It feels like this to me. It feels like a warm blanket. It feels like sitting by the fire on a cold day. Whatever it happens to be, this person associates. I would give the information back in hypnosis and help to strengthen the confidence that way. Is that more what you would add?
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
Okay.
That's really great.
Sorry.
Because, I mean,
okay.
the reason that I'm bringing that up is, let's say, you know, when it comes down to it, the people on this call are training to become, you know, like, let's say it was me, and God forbid, it could or should be me, where I've gone out and I've put my hands on probably a couple hundred thousand animals at this point in my life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've put my hands on a lot of animals, seen amazing changes just in the time we've been on this call. I've probably gotten 4 or 5 thank you notes from people. I just got letters from people today from Hay House, my publisher. You know,
awesome.
I get thank you notes almost every day. But
right.
when it comes down to one of my own animals, I might have my own emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I might have my own, I mean, thankfully I have the greatest healers around me, including students in my program, but, you know, I might have hesitation toward being able to heal my own animal. And that's what I'm just trying
right.
to get at, because I think that that would be what people on this call probably can go out at this point already and help a lot of other people's animals. But they may feel doubt or experience a hesitation or have an agenda or have a huge emotional response to working on their own animal. And that's all I was trying to get at. And I
okay.
the whole thing about, you know, just
bringing,
right. finding, anyway, what you said was great.
Well, since you said that, one thing I would encourage that as well is to allow yourself, the healers, to be objective when they do body scans, whatever. You might have a suspicion of what you think is wrong, but don't hold that. Do the body scan, do whatever techniques to do the evaluation before you actually start working with the animal, so that if something does come up, you can be aware. You'll be able to pick up, oh, well, yes, there is a little twinge there. Something isn't there. I'm going to send the energy here. And the other great thing about any kind of exercise anybody does, a hypnosis and energy work, is the same kind of thing as using a metaphoric muscle. Every time you use that muscle, it gets stronger and it gets better at what it does. So every time your students go out and work with these animals and are sending energy and communicating, you get better and better at it. And to allow yourself to become better at it, don't get stuck on what you think is going on, what you think might be wrong. And I know it's hard when you're working with your own animal. I have trouble doing that with my own animals. But just to keep the open mind, and I think that's one of the most important things as well, to be open to what you're going to learn. So everything is learning. You've learned something once, now you want to change the behavior so you can learn it again. You can unlearn it. But you have to, as you're remaining open-minded, reminding yourself that you have this gift. There's a reason why you've chosen to do what you do. You've chosen to work with animals, to communicate, to heal. And now you're going to use the gift you have already with the skills you're continuing to develop and get better and better at it as you do. I hope that answers your question a little
bit.
Okay.
I mean, you're saying what I'm saying to people all the time. Cause,
good.
I talk about animal communication is also, I think, a muscle, and these guys are sick of me saying that, so it's good.
Well,
that
the more practice, the better, and, you know, when you get the hits, you'll know, oh, wow, that was a loud yes, no, whatever response
yeah.
of what you're talking
no,
to.
No, that's exactly what I tell them. Okay. So I'm going to open it up for question and answer.
Awesome.
Okay, anybody have any questions? Okay, if you're speaking, you're muted. I'm surprised nobody has, we must have been so clear.
I guess. I hope so.
I have a question.
Okay.
I, a few years back, had a horse accident where she fell, and I sprained my ankle and cracked my rib. And so and I'm a massage therapist, so I'm really nervous about going out into the Bridal Trails Park by myself, or even sometimes with others, riding buddies, because sometimes in my mind I go, oh my God, you know, she could fall or spook at something, I could fall off and hurt myself. So what I've tried to do is, like, when I'm saddling her up, we have a talk, and I try to get into that meditative place where okay. we're going to have a good ride. And but it's sometimes it's hard that I don't know, my mind just takes me to places I don't want to go, and then I get scared.
Right, and that happens. You're not alone to feel that, to experience
yeah.
that.
Is there more? What else could I do? I know she feels it too. If I'm not grounded, she'll kind of give me a nudge and say, "Okay,
right.
before you get on me." But sometimes, you know, I guess it's just practice too, huh?
It is. Do you usually go out with buddies when you ride? I would recommend that you do go out with friends when you go out.
No, I don't, because I go okay. early in the morning, and
okay.
sometimes I just love it with it's just her
right.
and I, and we're out in the woods by ourselves, and it's really awesome, and I think she really enjoys it too, but,
yeah.
you know, then sometimes if something comes up, I go like, oh my God, what if?
The what ifs are that's the bogey that everybody gets.
Yeah.
And when you go out, one thing you could do, a couple things you could do, and I learned this actually at a seminar I went to a couple of years ago. If you ever, just for fun, when you go out to the barn, tap your horse, kind of approach backward, not to the horse, but trace your steps backward, and that actually is what we call neurolinguistic programming. It's you kind of switch how your brain is firing all the cues. So if you're doing the step backward, if your horse tolerates this, put the saddle on from the side that you don't normally do it. Do things that are a little bit different, so that you're having a different perspective. You're having to get yourself out of your thought, as it were. But also
right.
make sure that your horse is going to be okay doing this, because not every horse has been trained to or is comfortable or happy to be tacked up from the opposite side. So make sure that you're careful when you do this. But after a ride, after you've worked with the horse, maybe you'll tack her up and then untack her, but walk backward to the barn.
Uh-huh.
So it's just a totally different experience, but it will... switch your brain in a different way.
So the human would walk backward. Would you have the horse walking backward too, or would you just have the horse walking in front of you forward?
Well, you wouldn't necessarily do this with the horse, but you could.
I'd already got all my horses doing it in my mind.
I know, I do too. I go like back, you know.
Well, you know, if your horse is good with that, then do that. The point of this exercise is to do things differently from how you ordinarily would. Your horse will, if you're doing this with your horse, that's great. She'll say, wow, that's different. What's going on? What's going on here?
Yeah,
when you go out
to the mounting block would be pretty
right.
funny.
Yeah. Well, she already, if I get on the right side of her to lead her, she goes like, no, you're supposed to
okay.
be over here. And she'll try and get me, you know.
Okay.
So
that might be something that you'll have to do in a different kind of exercise. But just to get you prepared, able to think about your behaviors differently. The other thing, when you go out on your trail rides, particularly on days that you are starting to get negative thoughts.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'll teach you how to do this in just a second, but you can tell yourself that I don't have to go anywhere. I can just get on my horse and then dismount, and that will be the
right.
end of the day. And give yourself permission to say, all I need to do is this, and I don't need to do anything if I don't want to. Allow yourself to just say, you know what? If I don't feel like it, I don't have to. Because I think what problem people get into is they think, I've got to do it, I've got to do it, and they push that little bit further than they need to. You can go out, turn around, and come back again. Now, one thing that you can do, we can do it right now, is just take a nice deep breath and hold it for the count of four. And I'll count to three, one, two, three, four, and have a nice slow exhale. And then we're going to take in another breath when you're ready. And this time I want you to press your thumb and your pointing finger of either hand together. You can either press the thumb and finger together or you can just rub them together. And when we'll do that now, and just take that nice deep breath and count for four, three, two, one, and nice slow exhale. And when you exhale, releasing on the word calm, or whatever word works for you. It might be confident, it might be strong, a good power word for you that makes you feel, I can do this, I can go out 100 feet, I can do the whole trail ride, whatever it happens to be. That's something you can do when you're driving. You can do that when you're on your horse. I've done that when I'm on my horse.
Well, you know what I've done is, or what I've been really consistent about is doing like a weave, and in that weave, you know, putting safety, grounding,
okay,
protection,
good.
Ease, calm, you know, all sorts
excellent.
Of, it's what, yeah, and that seems to really help both of
okay,
us.
Okay, good. Well, that's something that you can do too, and there are so many different things that I'm sure you do in your daily life that you can be reminding yourself, and also when you're going through the day after your ride, think about the good points of your ride that day. What worked really well? What did you really enjoy doing?
Yeah.
Where did you go? And when you're walking through your woods, if there's a particular spot that you really like, you can turn that into a favorite place, a special place you go to in your mind for relaxation. So at the end of the day, when you come home and you're done with work or whatever, stretch out on the sofa, stretch out on your bed, whatever, and just imagine that you're in that special place. You can be with your horse, and you're just having a nice look around, noticing the smells of the forest, if there's a breeze, if there's any, just paint a picture in your mind of what to you.
Oh, I'm doing it right now.
Excellent. The most beautiful, relaxing part of the ride, and whenever you feel anxious, and this could be any time of the day, if anything is getting you wound up, you can go to that place. Nobody ever has to know, but you can go to that place in your mind where you are feeling completely confident and relaxed with your horse. And the thing is that, I mean, our horses can pick up when we're feeling anxious. They know.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
It's from our body. It's how we're holding ourselves when we're sitting on them, how we stand next to them. And the thing that we need to do is to be able to say, right, I'm going to be here right now, but my body's going to be relaxed and confident the way that it is when I'm in my special place, when I'm at that point in our trail ride where everything is just perfect and very quiet and calm. To be able to take it out that way. You're welcome.
Yeah.
I hope that
helped
you.
It did. Thank
Good.
You.
You're very welcome.
That was great.
Anybody else have a question or anything?
I have another one.
Okay.
Oh, Jane, you're crazy.
I know I am crazy. I'm wondering how, you know, how much of it do you see is the animal's behavior having to do with the guardian or the owner of that animal?
That I don't know, but I can say just from what I would believe that everything is energy. And when you say about the guardian, like the human guardian or spiritual guardian?
Yeah, the human.
Okay, just check that. Okay, so in that case, I can say the energy that we are giving out tells the animal a lot. And if you're approaching in a confident, happy way, they feel it. Uh-huh. If you're feeling a little bit scared or stressed out about work, that's another thing that people that
do they act out on behaviorally from a person's energy and thoughts and
yes.
Yeah.
I strongly believe that because well from my own experience I have been thinking things about work on a horse that I had and his behavior changed incredibly when I was thinking about my job.
Yeah.
And I still can't remember the name of this author, but she wrote Tao of Equus.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've got that book. Okay. I just looked at it this morning. How funny.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a great scene in it when the author is having one of her clients working grooming a horse, and in the middle of this grooming, the horse just moves away from this woman as fast and as far as he can. And the author asks, what happened? What were you thinking about? She says, oh, I was thinking about my boyfriend, who was a very abusive man to this woman. And the horse picked it up. And if you've ever been around or seen herd behavior and how one person, it seems, can get a whole herd moved. And whereas they have a lot of other people out there, and no matter what they do, they can't get these animals to go. They focus on the energy, they focus on the leadership and the confidence, somebody who can protect them. So if you or I or anyone is going toward our animal and things aren't quite right in our life, whatever it is, stressful or unhappy or really happy and great, but we're distracted because we'd rather be getting ready for Friday night than doing what we're doing right now, the horse can feel it, they can sense it. I mean, we expect them to be 100% paying attention all the time to us. And it's not fair if we don't have the same focus.
And you know, and we always give the animal the human behavior or thoughts. And a lot of times I see people who don't realize how much of their anxieties or energies, whatever, translate into their animal's behavior.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, here's another exercise you can, I don't know if you're holding a phone right now, but when you're off the line, if you just rub your hands together so you can feel the friction, and you get a ball of energy between your palms. Have you ever done that?
Yes. Yes.
So, so imagine that, and then imagine that you are your horse.
Yeah.
And as a prey animal, you've got all those instincts, everything, all the perceptions, the much better sense of smell, well, the peripheral vision, they've got that definitely, the hearing, and they read body language. That's all that they really do. They don't vocalize that much in a herd. Out in nature, they don't. In barns, more they do, but their whole thing is picking up the energy of what's around them. And as prey animals, they tend to want to be quiet because if they're communicating vocally, they're going to be heard by the mountain lion or the big dogs, whatever it is. So anyway, when you get back and you're doing this exercise, you get that little ball of energy. See if you can make it shrink and expand. And that's a good way to give yourself a new perspective, I guess, of what these other animals are seeing and feeling around them.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
That's all that they're getting. And if we're walking around with negative energy, if you've ever walked into a room that's being occupied by somebody in a really, really bad mood.
Oh, I have.
Feel like. Right.
Oh,
what does it feel like?
Not good. Yeah.
Right. So this is what your horse is picking up. Whether it's from you, if other people, if do you have your horse at your own property on your own, or are you at a barn with other people?
At a barn. Yeah.
Okay, so people, they get moods and whatever. So if you've ever walked in a situation at the barn where people aren't getting along or somebody's in a really bad mood or somebody's just had a fall or whatever it happens to be, you pick it up, your horse picks it up, other people's horses pick it up. It's like babies crying. One starts and it just goes through like a domino effect.
Wow.
The thing that I try to help people with is to tune that out, is to imagine an energy wall around you and around your horse that nothing
can affect
you.
Yeah, that's, I do that,
you.
Too.
Good, okay. So you've got that one, a great exercise that I use. If you imagine and this is a good protection one, actually. Imagine there are gold and silver threads that you are wrapping around yourself. And gold and silver are very high energy. They're very protective. And just imagine yourself, if you need to, you can almost like mummify yourself surrounded by these gold and silver threads. And they're protective.
And I do that like in a weave, when I do the weave.
Okay, excellent. So you already are practicing doing that, and that's one way that you can keep out the negative energy.
Reminds me to do it more. I forget to do it.
And it's one of those things as well that once you do it, if you put it into a habit, you don't think about it anymore. It becomes like muscle memory, and you just are doing it. When you go to see your horse, immediately get that protective, optimistic, confident energy shield up around you, so that when you are with your mare, everything is good. You are paying attention to her. She's paying attention to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you will take care of her. You will protect her. You're going to lead her. You're going to be the lead mare and take her where she needs to go, where she will be safe. And trust her also to be taking care of you.
Mm-hmm. I do that in the weave. This is all just reminding me to do it daily. Yeah.
You're already doing it. You're welcome. You're very welcome. And you're already doing it anyway, so this will just be reinforcing what you do so that you can continue to feel confident and strong and happy when you're with your horse. And remember to do the finger press as well, because that's a nice way to relax and bring yourself back to a nice, calm state.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, well, that was really great. I think people got a lot out of it. I can hear the brain ticking.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me to do this.
Yeah, and go ahead and tell everybody your website so they can go take a peek.
Oh, okay. It's www.calminsensehypnotherapy.com, and it's spelled calm, calminsensehypnotherapy.com. Or you can look up my name, Sarah Fogan, and it will take you there.
What was your last name? I'm sorry.
Fogan. F as in Frank. O-G-A-N.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, that was really great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Okay.
It's just going to be... are you recording it, or what are you doing?
Yes,
with...
I'm recording it.
Awesome.
So I will get you a copy.
Awesome. Could I put it on my website?
Of course.
Awesome. More advertising for you, too.
There you
cool.
Go.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and it was a lot of fun. I hope everybody had a good time.
We did. Thank you.
It was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
have
you.
A good night. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you very much. You're very welcome. Bye. Bye. Are you still there, John?